Turn and face this way, please. Is that person there just a big drip?
No.
Like it's drying down.
Only during the hardest rain did that start to leak, so it may be done. So the next hardest rain.
Which is 10 minutes probably.
Which brings me to my point, for my first point this morning. How many of you thought about our conversation yesterday about the weather? Come on. Did you? Yeah? You thought about it? The rest of you who didn't raise your hand did not think about it?
I thought about the weather. I didn't think about the conversation.
So you didn't think about the conversation about we're going to get it to rain just at night and be clear during the day? Did they think about that? No? Some of you did, some of you didn't? Those of you who did, what did you think?
When the sun came out yesterday, I thought, wow, Sherry did good.
Okay.
And then when it started pouring really hard last night, I said, I thought we were supposed to be getting this all out of our system yesterday.
No. Remember? What were the arrangements?
Rain at night.
It can rain all night and be nice during
Actually,
the sun.
Actually, I did think
of
that.
You did think of that? And other people think of that? Okay, and when you thought about it, what did you think? Michael?
It would be better if that happened.
It would be better if that happened. Yes.
Kind of like a preference.
Huh?
Kind of like a preference.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Yeah.
It only occurred to me with when the sun came out yesterday, just as was shared, that, it worked. That's about the extent of it. I didn't think about it this morning, though.
Uh-huh. Okay. Did you have something?
I thought, you know, I love it when it works this way.
Uh-huh. Okay. Anybody have a thought that when I was talking about it of, yeah, sure, right, Cooper. Something along those lines.
I think I had knowledge of the forecast, so I deferred to the forecast.
Like, interesting.
That's just the way it is. So, and I think I don't really mind the rains, like, well, with rain coming into the hall and into the kitchen. I can't reconsider. I did get a sense of deferring to the forecast. So
even though the forecast was so far wrong.
Well, no, my forecast said it was supposed to rain. See, here we go, right? I'm looking at it right now. So Saturday, Sunday, Monday ended up being sunny on Tuesday. That there were 60% chance of rain all of those days. But then I'm looking, last time I looked was Friday, which means that the information is no longer useful after probably Saturday.
Uh-huh.
But
uh-huh.
So according to
So you watched yourself go to an authority on the computer, I imagine, mm-hmm. and looking to that to decide mm-hmm. what was going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. So I read the forecast and then kind of go, okay, make a decision. Okay, well, that's the way it is. And in some sense, takes me out of, I mean, not the word you're going with this, but establishing any kind of an intention that might include me in all of that.
Uh-huh. Like that's a really good point. Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's how it feels. Like I just kind of say, okay, well,
that's
give myself over to this alternate reality.
Yes. Yeah. And the thing, of course, that's so interesting to me about that is that what Lori said is, oh, well, that's just the way it is here. They can't forecast the weather. And I'm thinking, if I were a meteorologist, with all of the stuff that they've got to read weather, if I couldn't read the weather that is raining for 3 solid days somewhere, I would find a new line of work just out of sheer personal self-respect. So there's the, I look to the external authority, I take myself out of it, and then, okay, good, yeah.
Well, it was along the lines of, because I have this thing, I have a little weather channel that I listen to every day, you know, I'm thinking it's going to tell me something, and sometimes it does, but often it's not, so that's why I just noticed that pattern and think, gosh, you know, what a job it must be to try to do this forecasting when it's so predictable. And then the thing that's been happening for me with all this is not so much, you know, what you were saying. I thought, well, who knows? I mean, we may get some sunshine, but we've had pretty much drought through April. So I was actually quite excited that we're getting this up until last night, when now it's feeling like it could turn into flood stage water, because we've got such intense, I don't know if it's like this all kind of up to, you know, the rivers, but the rivers have been pretty high anyway. So that's just been the thing on my mind, is like, whoa, God, this is really, really intense rain.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And yes, just kind of being with that and noticing what it's like. And wanted to put on my rain boots, actually, that I brought, because I thought it might rain. So that's where I've been with it.
Okay. Yeah, Karen.
So conditioning, the first thing conditioning usually tells me is that I didn't do something, so that's when I said, it just popped out of my mouth. And then recollection, I said, well, yeah, I did think of it in the manner of a simple statement that came through my mind, rain at night, sunny daytime, but there was no reflection of anything that, oh, sure, yeah, right, there was none of that.
Uh-huh. Okay. Karen.
Well, I don't know if this pertains, but I just have been amazed. I just thought if this was at home, I don't know that I've ever seen rain like this at home, that I would just be, we'd all be talking about it and what, running to the window and looking or out in it, or it just was like, whoa.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Dave?
I go to this. I sure wish I knew how she did that. Or does that. Because, I mean, I have lots of experience of it just, I mean, I guess making it up, but it just coincidental, really interesting.
Well, you know, here's how, for me, it relates to practice. Because I've been looking at, I've been looking at what I think you folks looked at last night, which is the conversation that we're either in conversation, we're in communication with authentic nature in the moment, or we are in communication with conditioned mind. Did I get that right? Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I've been looking at my relationship with that, since, you know, that's the question that's before us. And trying to figure out kind of, now, because you are who you are, I'll say these kinds of things and you can, you know, put it wherever you put it, but it never occurred to me when I encountered the Buddha's teaching that there was anything for me in that except applying it, as I understood it. Applying it. And the best thing I can compare it to is if I decided I wanted to, I don't know, what kind of sport should we look at?
Ski.
If I wanted to ski, downhill or no.
Water skiing.
Water skiing. Okay. If I wanted to do that, then what I would do is find the best expert I could find. Now, probably the way it would go is I would hear about this thing. Right? I would hear about whatever this is and think, and there would be a response in me. Oh, I'd like to do that. And then I would set about finding out how to do that. And then once I found out how to do that, the thing that I would no longer question is it possible? Because it's obvious that it is. Because people do it. So then my job is to figure out how to do it. Not, okay, so when people want to fill in their version of how they don't do that, or shall we just go on? Okay, because it's really important to see. So if I want to be the best water skier that I can be, if I'm, you know, a high Western achiever, then possibly the best water skier that has ever lived. And so I am going to devote myself to that in a way that just constantly fine tunes until, and of course the standards are going to go up, right? Because I'm getting better and better and better, which I have to be doing if what I'm doing is applying myself. So I think it's a, I always attribute this to St. John of the Cross, but I don't know if he actually said it. But the gist of it is, as soon as you have the information about what you need to do, you stop doing everything else and do that. Okay? There's no more conversation about, now what was it? Do I hold the rope? Okay? Because I have the information that I need. And so I look at, so now we'll take it back to the weather. So years ago, this is just another trait in my own personal practice. I accept as so everything that I encounter, because it is so. Now, whether or not I want to, what the relationship is that I will have with that, is determined by exploring it. But I figure that nothing is in my path, as Dave was saying yesterday, I think, nothing is in my path that is not for me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be here if it weren't for me. Okay? So whatever it is that is mine to get from that, it is up to me to get from that. So years ago, a fellow who I like a lot and respect and have no reason to think lies told me about the Sundance Festival that the Lakota Indians do in North Dakota, South Dakota, one of the Dakotas, every summer. Do people know about that? Yeah? And so the thing that he told me that struck me was that every year during this ceremony, at a certain point, they bring in an eagle. Now, they don't have it in a cage and turn it loose. They draw it to them through the power of their relationship with nature. Okay? So they are all focused on this, and they bring an eagle in who circles their gathering. Okay? And then at a certain point in the ceremony, they bring in a cloud and it rains. Okay? Now, I don't know if he accepted that as fact before he went there and did it, but he participated in it, and there was no doubt in his mind that it had happened, because he was there watching it happen. Okay? So I said to myself, huh, Jesus was well known for doing things like calming the seas. Okay? And when people questioned that, he accused them of lacking faith. Okay? And the idea was that, this is my interpretation of it, that our intention provides us with the life we have. And so if we want to have a different life experience, we must bring a different relationship to life. Okay? Because the life that we have is the life we have created. It's the life we have intended. It is the life that we maintain. And there's no aspect of that that is too small to take responsibility for. It is every single second of every single day. That's what's happening. And as we've been talking about here, and as I've been talking about kind of nonstop everywhere, where that happens is either in communication with life, or communication with conditioning. Now, most people are in communication with conditioning all the time. It's where they look for information. When the information is there, that's what they believe. Okay, they accept it as truth. I'll talk to people for years about where do you look for information, and I know they don't know what I'm talking about. Okay? Because it seems like the information simply appears. Okay, so what do you think about the situation in Afghanistan? And a response appears. Okay, something happens. Whether I don't know, or you have a huge opinion on the subject, or you're really quite neutral and neutral on the subject. No, well, you're philosophical. That's the word I'm going for. Somewhere along there. But something appears. And what we don't do is say, really? Now, is that true? Is that my experience? Is that, okay? It comes in, it's me, and I go with whatever it is. Okay, so most of us have had the experience over and over and over of being shocked when there's something that appears that is so either outrageous or bizarre or out of sync that we go, you know that one? Okay, but what we don't do is say, I bet that's an example of what's going on all the time. It's just that most of the time, I accept it and believe it. I think that it's me, and it's true, and so I go on. Okay? So that communication, that conversation that we're in with egocentric karmic conditioning is the one that is creating the reality that we're living in. Now, because it is so convincing and we believe it so completely, questioning that just seems whatever. It takes a long time before it's even seen as valuable. People with me so far? Yeah. So it's great what, you know, when Chris said, I look to an authority. Sometimes we know we're looking to an authority outside. Most of the time we're looking to an authority here, inside. It's not inside. If you really look at it, it doesn't actually feel like it's inside your head, but that's where the information appears, or seems to appear, so it feels that way. And what we don't do is stop and consider what is actually our experience. So, who said? Was it Karen? Were you talking yesterday about not knowing, not being sure what your experience is?
Yeah.
That's such a foreign notion that it's only with practice that you have really been able to look and see, yes, this is my experience. Yeah. And of course, we would each think that that was a very unusual sort of thing. I would suggest that it is everybody's experience. It's just that most people, and this is the critical conclusion of this, although I'm not going to conclude here, people are so convinced that ego is who they are that they assume that ego's perspective is theirs. So when ego says what it wants, people assume that's what they want. That's how complete the identification is. So to actually do a process, the first step of the process, of course, is experiencing who I am authentically. The second phase of it is looking to that authenticity to see what is so, recognizing what is authentic as compared to the ego identification that we are accustomed to going with. So that's what's possible for us. That you. That's what's possible for you. Okay? I'd say us, but I feel like my life, that's what my life is devoted to. And so, I know it's possible for me. I not only know it's possible for me, I live it. And so, there's not the same questioning in my mind. You know, I don't want to know what egocentric karmic conditioning wants. I don't care what it thinks, what it feels, what it decides, what it says it needs. I don't care. I was talking with a friend the other day who is he's a very, very spiritual guy. And he was describing an experience to me that made me wish he were a Zen meditator. Because what he was talking about, he was trying to describe for me what it's like to look to authenticity to make a decision about things as simple as eating and drinking. And he was seeing how when that ego structure is not there making the decision, he actually doesn't know what he wants to eat. Without ego saying, not even saying, it doesn't even have to say, there's just this whole menu there of this is what you like, eat that. Okay? And without that, he would have to actually stop and look to his body and sense what his body wanted and then make a decision about food based on that. Well, for those of us, living in the present, that's kind of not rocket science. Okay? But it is extremely unfamiliar to people who don't know that there is a difference between that information center and center.
This is an awareness that's been coming up for me just recently. And I started journaling to get in touch with the part of myself that's so frightened of letting go of that egocentric karmic conditioning, source of knowledge. There's a part of me that feels like I've spent my whole life accumulating that, and now I'm expected to just drop it. And I don't yet have enough experience to trust that life will take care of that. So
yes, so you believe that knowledge is stored in the computer, not in life. Yes?
Yes.
Uh-huh. That it only exists if it exists in this particular configuration, in this particular location.
Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
So, the approach I've been using is then reassuring that part of myself that it's okay to take risks and to trust and see what happens, and that young part of myself is not responsible for it. I can take responsibility for what happens. It's okay to relax and to give that, to take the time to stop, because there's this urgency, and the habit is I'm going where the database is,
right,
rather than take time to see where else it might come from.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Which is interesting to me, for you personally, because what the choices that you have made throughout your professional life is to have a background, a database, and then go into realms that are completely undata related.
Yep.
So you've been sneaking up on this for a while.
Yes, and still there's a disconnect. Because, and I've seen it, quote unquote, facilitating in my work world, my professional life, and facilitating in my spiritual practice. there's self-consciousness that comes up in my spiritual practice that I've gotten past, I no longer pay attention to in my the rest of the practice, in my professional work.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a comfort and ease in being, you know, quote unquote, on the cushion in my professional world, and there's a great deal of beginner's self-consciousness in my spiritual practice mm-hmm. as a facilitator.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Good distinction, yeah.
One of the things I've been looking at a lot in the past couple of years is that whole idea of a skin personality and how that person has been running practice and running, you know, it's been really hard for me to see that level of conditioning, and now it's starting to become really seen. And so one of the things I noticed is that if I buy something for myself, I usually don't enjoy it. I mean, it's often there's some misery associated with that. And so I started really looking at it and, you know, I watch myself go unconscious.
Uh-huh.
It's like whatever my conditioning is, that you can't have anything for yourself, or I think, you can't have anything for yourself, so we're going to go unconscious. You know, I'm going to do this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Make a quick decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I started looking at that, so I was like, okay. So it seems like what I can do with that is be conscious would be the thing.
Yes.
You know, so I started to decide, you know, when I want to get something, because first of all, doing a garden for creativity and fun got on my best room yet list. Now that did not come from my conditioning.
No.
It just got on there.
Yes.
And so I started...
That might have come on in a moment of what conditioning would call unconsciousness, because conditioning wasn't there.
Because I did best yet differently than I usually do, because I think that skin subpersonality likes to be my best yet plan too.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
And so that part didn't get to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that got on there, so I was like, huh, so let's see, what am I going to do with this? And so I would I decided just to try to be as conscious as possible and notice what I could notice. And so I've gotten a few things, and I started working on my garden, and it has been one of the most, I feel so fed by it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't have any of that whole stuff attached to it that normally has, like I shouldn't be spending the money on this, I shouldn't, you know, I should make a different decision, it's extravagant. And it's like, I feel like I just stepped into something totally different.
Uh-huh. Yeah, step through a veil.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the way to it was.
That's a disgusting image.
Because, you know, it can't, you know, because there's like the self improvement, well, I'm doing it this way, so now I'll do it that way. But this is just like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just be conscious. I mean, just try to be as conscious as possible.
Yeah.
With everything around this garden.
Uh huh.
And just see. And it's been like, it's just like some huge thing opened up.
Uh huh. And, of course, as we were talking about, I guess it was yesterday, to me, the whole change happened when that occurred to you.
It occurred to me that I was going unconscious.
Yes. When you saw that, everything shifted. And now it's realizing, exploring, experimenting with, seeing all of the various aspects and how it plays out and that sort of thing. But you had stepped through that in order to have that awareness.
Yeah, and the difference between the two places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Samsara, nirvana.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Samsara, nirvana. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing is different except where you're seeing it from.
Yeah.
And there is still a conversation. There is still a conversation. Mm-hmm. It's just that the conversation is here, and it's one of loving kindness and acceptance and joy and fun.
It,
and
it feels so kind, and I just feel so happy about that garden.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a source of joy for me.
Yes, and that same garden mm-hmm. brought into this conversation would be hell.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I'm sure about that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What do I really want it anyway?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you. Alex?
I've been looking at this a little bit, too. There's this particular activity that I was asked to do at the monastery quite a while ago. And I remember that there was this feeling that I needed to learn a lot, to retain lots of information, that I needed to get better at doing it. Well, my experience of it was that that had gone on for a while, done several retreats where all of my attention was focused on it. I'd be sitting in group, and all I could think about was, did I do this? Did this happen? It was constant. Mm-hmm. And I just watched myself. I had to keep bringing myself to be here. And my relationship with this same piece of content or this same area of responsibility feels really different in that I feel like there's a trust that what I need to know will be there for me when I actually show up to do it. Mm-hmm. And it's not the same thing as who cares?
Right. Oh, not at all.
Which is, I feel like the other side of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where I'm not looking at the pink elephant.
That's right. I have to be just focused on nothing else and obsessing about it, or I don't care.
Right. I don't care. And both, both of those have been, I've tried them.
Uh-huh. And you've experimented.
I've experimented with how that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I've done, that it's something that I've consciously tried to do. It's almost like, I think everything else fed into my relationship with that, the way that I have, I have that same relationship with everything, it feels like. I'll correct myself with that. There are certain things that seem more believable that I need to have that conditioned relationship with, that I need to constantly be engaged with.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'll watch an activity such as being involved in a meeting,
uh-huh,
where that same thing is going on, like, you don't have anything to say. Why don't you have anything to say?
Yes.
And that, it's still believable in certain areas.
Mm-hmm.
And I watch how that...
And excuse me just a second, but why don't you have anything to say?
Because
what exactly? I mean, what would there be to say?
Yes.
Except, you know, the voice is saying,
that
doesn't have anything to do with the meeting.
No.
And so, yeah, there you are, just left with nothing.
Nothing.
Which is the point.
Yeah, it feels like I am left with something. I'm left with the feeling of, well, the setup for it all is, well, there you go, you can't do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that I am left with that relationship, essentially. That's all I'm left with.
Yes.
And which is the hell I think you were pointing at.
Yeah, and a piece of information that says you're inadequate, you can't do this, this doesn't mm-hmm. work for you, you're just, you know, it's just, I'm sorry, but what the hell? And it seems so believable based on that experience you were just put through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think what I'm practicing now is applying what I know is possible because it exists in this other area where I don't walk into the situation with any kind of idea about it that, oh, we have this? Okay, that's what we're going to do. And if I look at seeing where are the similarities, I don't know, that might be a shaky place in and of itself because I don't... like applying it is
application is dangerous.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. like probably
yeah.
not.
Conditioned mind loves to learn.
Pardon me?
Conditioned mind loves to learn. It likes to gather facts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I think perhaps that's the difficulty that I experience with seeing something work over here and it's not working over here is that there's the conditioned mind goes to how did that happen and trying to figure it out.
Oh,
even if it doesn't even
which
look
again
like
you know in that relationship in that conversation it doesn't matter what the content is.
You know.
Right? It's that I'm here instead of here.
Yeah.
You know, that's the whole point. We can talk about anything as long as we're not here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that here is the application.
Yes. 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 That is the application for everything.
Yeah.
Here, now, this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is probably what is so difficult with training or teaching anybody how to do anything. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I can't show somebody how to do.
You can show them how to peel potatoes, but you can't show them how to be present. You can't teach them. Now, that's not true. You can't teach them how to be present. You can show them how to be present.
That's correct, yeah. Like,
that's the old faith can't be taught, it can only be caught.
That's good.
Yeah.
And it's like how it feels like I got information when I was a child. Like, people can be telling me things, which is not the same thing as me seeing what they're doing.
Yes.
And that's probably why they have such great poop detectors, or that they are able to get information that doesn't exist on a exterior kind of...
I think you just said it. I mean, children are going with what people are telling them, and what they're learning is, ooh, you're a messed up individual.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but you're my messed up individual, and therefore I must accommodate.
Yes. Yeah.
And in fact, what the creepiest part is, what we're learning is, and that's what I'm going to grow up and be. Mm-hmm. Because if there's no other information available,
yes,
then, okay, that's where I'm headed.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, I'll give up my heart, and I'll give up authenticity, and I'll give up intuitive knowing, and I'll give up because... where I'm going.
And just one more part about that is what we looked at yesterday when we were looking at what practice, what drove you us to practice. Think that it's that parallel of being drawn back to what I originally had before everything was, before that skyscraper went up, which is what I got from those around me, was that's the way to live. I have to live with this skyscraper blocking my view of life. And we're just dismantling it to get back to where... That's why it feels like I'm going back home, is because it's always been here. It's just been blocked up.
Yes. And so we put two things together. One, that, which is absolutely so. You are returning to very close to where you started out with knowing the deal.
Yeah, the intelligence. It's the way you described the mentor relationship with the... with the innocence of the child,
it all comes together.
Yes.
There is that open-hearted innocence of a child being guided by someone who actually knows what's going on, and can say, "You're right. That you don't want to step in that hole." Or, remember, that's the same one that we looked at. So it's putting those two things together, because the mentor is a grown-up version of that innocence.
Yeah.
Retains the innocence, and yet has the clarity and the wisdom and the knowledge.
Yeah.
Actually.
To be appropriate, because the child could just very well do all sorts of things, like you said, stepping in holes, standing out in the rain.
Well, actually, wasn't able to avoid what happened to it. Just wasn't. Just didn't have the ability.
Yes.
No protection. No guidance. No. Yeah. So that's what we can put together now.
Right. That's the beauty of where we
combination.
Can. Yeah. It's almost like we had to get through all of this, whatever. I don't make it into a belief system or anything like that, but it seems like that's the beauty that I think that we as people, at least I think I've heard someone say that before. Is that Chris or Jane?
No. Oh, I see. Yeah, it certainly could be. So I go back to Ram Dass talking about, you know, now that there's LSD, why would you want to meditate? isn't really meditation a waste of time when you can just ingest enlightenment? Is it okay? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. It's a ghost. what he said was, enlightenment in a capsule, but you don't know where you went or how you got there or where you are or how to get back. And you certainly couldn't show anybody else how to get there. You couldn't tell them where they are, and you couldn't get them back. So you're useless. But if you go every step of the way, then you are not useless. You know exactly where the path goes and where every side road is and what happens down there and what happens down there and what happens down there. And so you can say with great confidence, it's fine. You can go. It's safe. It's all right. It's great. You'll love it. If you get lost, call me. You know?
Yeah.
I can guide you back to the trail.
Because there's a map. I've been there.
Yes, exactly.
I have an experience of it.
Well, and yes, and a map in the sense of you walking to and from your hermitage.
Mm-hmm.
You could just close your eyes and walk straight there. Mm-hmm. It's that kind of, there is no more confusion about it.
Right.
It's not hard. Yeah. It's really easy.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Yeah.
So it's that kind of map.
Yeah, that kind of map, and that the way it feels like it ties in is like there's a, like process mapping. When we process map, feels like I don't know, for those who have a lot of experience with hearing what people say, it feels like when we talk about conditioning and egocentric karmic conditioning, it all sounds the same.
Oh.
Like there's a pattern to it. So we're not really as big of a mystery. It's not mysterious at all how we end up with what we end up.
Only ego wants us to believe we are different and special. Yeah. And different and special in not a good way. Well, except when we're different and special in a really good way. Yeah. Yeah. But it's true. I mean, it's, you know, the details of egocentric karmic conditioning are as big as I grew up here and you grew up there.
Right.
You know, they're that, ooh.
Yeah, that's where it's like
from that, it's the same story.
Yeah. That's where conditioned mind bogs us down with.
Yeah.
The details of how we're different.
Which brings us full circle, doesn't it, to communication. The depth at which people are trained to believe you can't tell. You can't say anything about it. You can't reveal because everybody's not going to know how awful you are. No. Everybody's going to go,
right.
Really? You think that's bad?
Yeah.
Which is what we all hate. You think that's bad? Let me tell you.
And meanwhile, you're showing them the map of this is exactly how it works, and there's where the bad awful thing is in this map over here.
Mm-hmm.
And there really isn't anything awful about it because it's a map of egocentric karmic conditioning, not you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all true. Thank you, sir. Amazing what can happen when you're not in a conversation with
well it's fun.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Being here is fun.
Yeah.
Being given insights and awareness and connections and clarity is fun.
Yeah. It's like improv.
It's very like improv. Mm-hmm. Okay, so anybody have anything else about that?
I just had an image that keeps coming up. It occurred to me after listening to you on Open Air a couple weeks ago. I won't even try to remember what you said or what the conversation was, but the image I got was balance, scales,
and authenticity and life are on one side and conditionings on the other. And I sort of always saw them as equal or teetering, and it's what I realized is life has a lot more heaviness to it, weight, substance, and it takes my effort to keep conditioning somewhat in balance.
Yes.
And if I stop trying, if I stop that, the whole thing tips in the right direction.
Yes, sister. Yes. So the image that I've played with, I don't know if I've played with it with all of you, but what are you guys doing with this big whiteboard?
I know, something fine.
Okay. So here is the universe. Am I right with any of these?
Well, no, this is what works and what doesn't. So.
Okay. Well, I'm not. It'll be. I'm going to be low impact. Okay. Here's the universe. Here's whole mind, life. Here's life. There's egocentric. Okay. But if I go like this. It can seem the biggest thing going.
We have a recording, so it has to go.
Oh, I see. Very good.
It's for the blog, you know?
Right, okay. So everybody gets the... And that's the only way we can make it seem, or it can make us believe, that it is bigger, more important, more powerful than we are.
Yeah.
Than life is. Because we are life. That's the thing to get. That's the smile. God loves you. All the wisdom we need is available in that. And what it takes to talk us out of that is an incessant conversation about what's wrong. Because otherwise, it is going to be so crystal clear to us that life adores us. That there's just not going to be any more opportunity, reason, argument for suffering. There's just not. The only suffering that exists in that conversation. I mean, if you just think about it, you know, if that conversation stopped right now, you would have no information at all that there's anything wrong with you, that anything is other than the way it should be. That everything isn't just exactly fine. We would have no source of information of anything other than life is love.
Yeah, it just kind of struck me about the communication piece, so we're often in communication with conditioning, and that's that whole separation thing, and we're all by ourselves, and there's something bad or wrong.
Just the two of us.
We're in close communication, trying to figure it out. And then, you know, there's that. And then Chris said it in our Southeast group about facilitation challenges, and let's look at it like we're all in this together. And it's that great place of I can be over here in a secret conversation with it. Or I can be communicating about what it's doing, you know, about
yes.
it.
Yes.
And
yes.
then that's the big connector because
yes.
we all have that.
Yes. And again, the magic happens in that moment when I'm over here in this, no, I'm not over here. I'm over here because it's in the past, right? I'm over here in this intimate conversation with egocentric karmic conditioning. And there's a little gap and I go, I could talk to Sonia about. I could seek guidance. Okay? By the time that thought occurs, the shift has already happened. Mm-hmm. You're already disidentified and you're back on track. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not an argument for not talking about it, because if we don't go ahead and communicate about it, then it's going to, you know, it's going to want to talk us into, so you're disidentified now, so it's fine. You don't need to really say anything about that. Why bother them with that, really?
Yeah,
but for all of us, excuse me just a moment, but for all of us to have the benefit of everybody going through that process is just tremendous.
Well, Yeah, because it's interesting to me. It's like exposing conditioning is really wrong in conditioning's eyes.
Oh.
Because what it says to me is you always say something. Yeah, everybody else is all spiritual and...
And you're always talking about me. You're always bringing up our relationship.
You're talking about me.
You're just supposed to listen to me.
That's right. We don't have that kind of relationship.
So, in the beginning, when you were talking about water skiing as an example, how it seems to me that I do that very process that you're talking about with almost everything in my life except spiritual practice. That I accept guidance from people whom I know have been there before, who, you know, and then somehow I get to spiritual practice and it's like, okay, this is a whole new game. This is something that's completely different than anything you've ever done. And, you know, so I keep a schedule with my business.
Uh-huh.
I do things when I don't want to based on a bigger view, you know, like how this is going, rather than pretty much everything down the line.
Yeah.
And then it comes to spiritual practice and it's like, okay, we're going to reconsider all of life and it looks like this.
Yeah. Which, Chris, is exactly my concern and the reason I really want us to have these very deep conversations. Mm-hmm. Because... the danger of egocentric karmic conditioning taking over practice without a person having any idea it's happened is huge.
Yeah.
For exactly the reason that you laid out.
Yeah. I think that was in that conversation we had the other day, that's what really became clear, is that the integrity of practice comes out of, and the purity of the practice comes out of that everybody's watching all the time.
Yes.
And anything short of that is not going to get it.
Yes. So all of those, I think Soyin Shaku is probably one of the most famous for that kind of live your life as if, you know, live every moment of your life. He wouldn't have said this probably, but it's like this. As if it's happening on the 50-yard line of a packed football stadium.
All the attention is right there.
Right there. What are you going to do? You know, how are you going to...
Mm-hmm.
So just that sense of what would be revealed. Now, there might be things that we'd have a natural reticence about doing there that would actually not be anything we shouldn't be doing. But it's just a kind of a, you know, say you'd want a wall around your bathroom, maybe. So there is that, and still really good to look at. You know, what goes on with that?
What's that difference?
Yeah. You know, the dog goes out. Oh, good job. And funny we don't have that approach ourselves. But those kinds of things would be just about the only things. You know, we certainly, all of the stuff that egocentric karmic conditioning talks us into, you know, we would be very aware of if a whole stadium full of people was looking at us. And is that the choice that we would make? But the heart would never ask us to do anything that it wasn't fine with everybody there watching.
Mm-hmm.
Good, thank you.
On the topic of communication, something that happens with me, well, there are two things. One is that I end up communicating after the fact, or as the place of the thing that happened that I don't want to communicate, so or not communicating at all. And the other one
that
is...
that I doesn't want to.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a really important distinction. I doesn't want you to communicate about those things. The ego doesn't want you to communicate.
The other one is, like, for instance, so communicating in group to get a... just like at an inappropriate time, I don't have the information I need, so now I end up needing to take everyone's time to get this piece of information. So the example that just happened is self-communicating. I don't know. Ego doesn't want to communicate this. I think it will be helpful. So I'm not sure how quarantined I am, and I need to use the facilities. So I ended up using one of these bathrooms right here, and I didn't have a piece of information what bathroom should I use. So so I could ask in group, and at the same time, it seems like it would be better if I had made sure I had that piece of information before I have to take up everyone's
time.
Well,
here's the deal. This would say that is the case. Mm-hmm. But if we look at every moment of life as life's... Who is that?
Our European folks are downstairs. They're doing a little work and meditation.
Are they turning on lights?
What's that?
Yeah, they turn a light down in the dining room.
Oh, it's probably the one that's turned down. There's going to be a little banging because they're turning over chairs and cleaning chairs and stuff.
We don't care as long as we know who it is. We like them. So we don't like people we don't know. So if we look at life, at every moment of life, as a gift from life to help us end our suffering, because I'm convinced that that's what's going on. Okay? So here you are, separate from life, believing you're in that relationship with egocentric karmic conditioning, believing that you're separate from life, this little isolated, suffering, mass of protoplasm or whatever it is. And life is constantly saying, so there you are. If you realize that, then you will realize, wait a minute, I don't know what bathroom to use since I'm quarantined. Okay. I better find out. Okay. And I'm going to find out. Now, this is a really, to me, another really interesting distinction. Ego wants us to find out everything that serves it. Get all of the information that serves it, right? Do all of the, but not any of the information that serves all. So what's motivating you in that awareness, I project, is a concern that you're in quarantine and you may be contagious. And if you are, you don't want everybody else to wind up with what you've got. So you want to make sure that you have the information you need to take care of everybody. Great. That's a great thing to see. Okay? And then you need to find out. And you might file it away if you want to, just in the intention file, that the next time I'm in this situation, I hope it occurs to me to get the information before, to get the information at an appropriate time. To get the information at a time that doesn't have such an impact on everybody else. But there's not anything of you did it wrong, you should have known better, if you had whatever. You know, it's just a thank you. Got it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Got it.
I think I slid it over into the I should have known better. Somehow, it's an unpleasant experience, this thing that happens. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the most disastrous, I think, for myself, the single most disastrous piece of childhood conditioning. You should have known better. I mean, it's utterly insane, and I really think it's a line that children cross, you know, on their way to... that. As soon as a child is willing to accept, you should have known better, a completely insane premise. Does everybody get that? Mm-hmm. I mean, how could you have known better? How could you have known? So at some time in the past, you should know what's going to happen in the future? How would that work? But as soon as a child buys that, I think that's what the real bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah. Okay, that's when you you reach adulthood.
For me, I think that that is the single thing that is a big sabotage in communication. I think for me, when that happened, it's why I don't communicate about certain things, is that I need to figure it out. And I think that's where the initiative that folks do out there, that all the better ideas, all these things come from, is what's stopping me from communicating in the first place.
Well, we got into so much trouble when we didn't know.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So to go off by yourself and try to get it together became a real big survival thing. And, by the way, it really keeps egocentric karmic conditioning in place. Yeah. Yeah. So the quality that we're looking at with this whole conversation is humility. To be able to say, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what to do. I didn't know I was supposed to do that. I missed that part of the instructions. It never occurred to me. Gosh. I mean, you can say, I'm sorry, if you just need something to say. But there's no reason to be sorry. There's no reason to feel bad. There's no reason to feel guilty. There's no should about it. But to be in that place of, wow, thank you. I got it. That's helpful. Now, are you going to apply it anywhere? Are you going to learn anything? No. Because if you do that, it's just, you know, it's just going to off in another direction. But, wow, that's really helpful. And the odds are good the next time it will occur to you, if you're not in this conversation when life gives you that information. Okay? If you're in this conversation when life gives you that information, you'll miss it, just in the same way that we miss what's said in a conversation with external folks when we're in this conversation.
There's I love that word, humility. That yesterday in our exercise, what do we project on the people we admire most about practice? That was a big word. I, you know, underlined that one because it just seems so what the Buddha taught. And you know, there's a really I don't know if I can exactly put it together, but there's a really interesting thing about this for me right now. You said something earlier, and I heard you say it in Not What But How retreat, and I don't remember us really talking about it like this before, in that this relationship between me and life, it is a conversation.
Yes.
That's just, and that's really, that really is my experience.
Yes.
And it's like I'm just a, it's almost like I'm a neutral entity, and it's like I, this is the humility part. It's like, I'm not in charge of any of this. I don't know where I came from. I don't know anything about it. But there is guidance available. My habit is to go to receive guidance from this thing that hates me, wants to, is not interested in me being successful, is not interested in anybody else being successful, and then at the same time putting me first in this really weird, self-destructive way. But I can also go to guidance for this other thing, and it really is like a conversation. And a lot of conversation, I think, is just, I love you, or here, enjoy this, or see how beautiful everything is. But a lot of times, also, it's really practical. It's like, you know what? I think I ought to, it's just, oh, I showed it before.
Yeah.
This will be the
thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. It is, in many ways, like becoming a very small, trusting, adored child in the care of an adoring, compassionate, endlessly kind parent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess the part is, so, I mean, this is always intriguing.
And you're both of those.
That's the part. Yeah, that I'm that, but I'm also that. And yet, at the same time, there's like, I'm the container that's holding it. See, there's even, I'm bigger even than that, you know? And it's just, there's this mystery in there, it's just endlessly.
So, do you, Kenneth's way of saying it? I am not it. Because ego would like that very, very much. I am not it. It is all of me. Which to me is what you're describing.
Yeah. It's something I really appreciate about how things are, the way that we that things are in this practice. You know, like we've been talking as our team has been talking a lot about training, and last night we did, and also just kind of in a practical way in terms of, you know, we're training in these different ways, and the training that's offered, it's offered on a really tangible level. Like even as simple as going to my supervisor to ask for guidance about how to do the job, it's the same movement as going to life to seek guidance about anything. And so it's like it's broken down in that way so we can practice on this really tangible level.
Yes.
But we're practicing the very things that will liberate us.
Yes.
Which I think would be really hard to do without some kind of a real, like a training structure for it to happen.
Yeah. And the way you're describing that is great, because what we can see is there's never a moment that guidance and support is not available to us. Because, you know, the truth of the matter is, I got this with my teacher, and then realizing how I had everything going with him that I had going with everything that ever happened to me in my life. And I thought, well, you know, there's a way in which anybody could train me. Everything can train me. If I would approach it the same way I approach him, then there I am. And that was the kind of lead in to, you know, that everything in life is there attempting to. Because one of the things that I got early on that it was so helpful is realizing that he wasn't getting anything out of training me. That was really, really important. You know, that truly was selfless service. And because he was a smart guy, I mean, he could have done an awful lot of other things with his life if assisting people to end suffering hadn't been the thing that he was called to do. And so once I got that, then motivation was out of the equation. So it became clear that it was all for me. You know, when we're in that place, you know, you've got a boss, and you think, man, I think, well, okay, I can see, but I think, you know, that kind of...
Or they're trying to make a profit.
Yeah, they're just in it for themselves, whatever it is. And once we get past that, because that's this, right? Mm-hmm. That's what maintains this. Once we get past that and see, no, everything is for me, and the only thing that doesn't like that is this. So every time this gets stirred up about something, I get to see it for what it is. It just doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, it's just so fascinating that in the relationship with this, that it's like it's personal in a way. I mean, it isn't really, because... But it feels like that. So much to, it's almost like I am really talking to a person who is offering me guidance, who is putting things in my way. It, you know, same thing I said yesterday, really. But it's just, but to see that it's possible to be in conversation with that, and that's what I really want. And it gives something for the attention to be on instead of this,
yes.
Which I think for a long time I didn't realize that. I was trying to like just erase this. I was trying to erase that, but I didn't have anything else to put my attention to on it, so it just kept on going back there. But to realize there's actually something happening all the time here that my attention can be on, and so there's really no compelling reason to do that other than just, you know, karma and habit, which is really compelling.
the old Zen story about the guy. Dave? That's the relationship that's going on all the time. So life is calling you and you're responding. Life is calling you and you're responding. Life is calling you and you're responding. Second by second by second by second by second.
Yeah, and I become a person who I had no idea I was as a result of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there's a person that goes in that conversation too. With conditioning.
Oh.
And it's almost like, it's not really like there's a person in this, but it kind of is. It's, I guess, you know, authentic nature. It's Yeah, I find myself as something that I did not know I was before.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, what you find yourself to be is what is when egocentric karmic conditioning isn't.
Right. Yeah, which is like that whiteboard. It's like everything.
It's everything. Mm-hmm. Then life can manifest itself through you in every way.
Yeah, and there's that mystery because it's everything, and yet I am here with this point of view. Just, wow.
It's very good. Whoa! Let's go this way, Karen.
So, with the reference to humility, I've been looking at that, and to me, in my experience, it's in that place where I'm receiving, in that way you described, of thank you. I mean, and gratitude goes with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's such a loaded word. We hear humble, actually, it's that place where I'm standing fully upright and receiving what life is offering.
Yes, and it's a place that Christians particularly will talk about as not me, but God in me. Which is that I am not it. It is all of me. So having that kind of front row seat as life does its magic, to realize it's not me, but it's being given to me, is that place of fully embracing that looks like humility.
Yes, it's a word that only can be experienced.
Mm-hmm.
It's
well, I would say that you, a very, I bet, familiar place for you is in creating art. You know, that something, that there's just magic that happens, and there's this beautiful thing.
And through me.
Yes, and if somebody said, oh, Karen, that is just, you could stand there and go, isn't it gorgeous?
Mm-hmm.
Now, somebody else hearing it would say, what an egomaniac. Mm-hmm. But you're not, you have no ownership of it. Mm-hmm. You just got to be the hands that it came through.
And then there's this other place I'm looking at, when we're receiving guidance, it's awareness talking to awareness.
Yes.
That's what's being informed.
Yes.
And it's not that this awareness doesn't know it, but it's sometimes it feels that way. Says some part of me that I'm being informed of something new.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Although, does it feel familiar?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's almost like that thing was some part of me being awakened.
Exactly.
Yes. There's that word.
Yeah.
That's an interesting concept. I mean, that's an interesting experience.
Yes. And I would bet that everybody in this room, again, knows that experience, that with practice, that's what called us to practice. You know, people will tell me all the time, because I wrote the key and because of what I do, they'll say, you know, it's so interesting to me. I know everything you're saying. I know this, and it's like, yeah, of course you do. It's who you are, you know. So we awaken to who we actually are, to who we authentically are, and what we do in work like this is learn to trust that. To learn to trust it, to really be in a. It's funny. It's that same. It's worshiping in a place of equality. So being in absolute, a state of absolute wonder and awe, and devotion to that which animates me as well. So there's no one down, and that's what makes your experience of it
as important to me as my experience of it.
And that awe and humility are really hand in hand.
Hand in hand. They are, we could say they are the same quality. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Different words to describe essentially the essence of each is exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, the essence of everything is exactly the same. So there we go. It makes that easy. Yeah.
Okay. Well, what's come up for me in this conversation is how the facilitation training and the reflective listening buddies and everything has been training us, and for me, not to be in that conversation, and how coming here, how much quicker I'm just here. It's like I just arrived here.
Yes.
And I notice conditioning wanting to draw me into conversations, but there's this sense of life happening so fast that there's just no time for it. And
I don't have time for you. No.
Seriously, almost like I'm just gonna. I don't want to get left behind, and so I'm just, you know. And those are the comments. I just, we'll talk. Tell me later then, because I just, you know, I want to be with this pair I'm meeting, or I want to. I just want to be here so much more, and more and more I find myself choosing that.
Yeah, well, and that's perfectly stated. I don't want to be left behind. Life is where I want to be. It's what's thrilling and exciting. Any amount of time or energy, attention that I give to egocentric karmic conditioning is a moment that I don't have with life. And this will repeat. Egocentric karmic conditioning will repeat endlessly. Life never will. Mm-hmm. So that moment that we weren't there is a moment that we lost of life.
Mm-hmm. And that the board with the dot, it's not even like there's a light and a dark room. There's like, you know, a light. There's light, and then there's, I don't know what, being inside of a... under a microscope. I mean, it's just so...
Well, and what's creepy about that is that dot becomes a room that contains the world.
Yeah.
And the amount of tunnel vision, the amount of concentration that it takes to turn that tiny dot into a universe is, it should tell us how fantastic we are, what is possible for us.
Well, the energy it takes.
Yeah.
And then,
I mean, we could feed the world. We can anything.
And it has to be all generated in that little dot. There is, you don't have access to the energy almost. It's like, it's just, I don't know, it's just hopeless, really.
Yes. Yeah. And yet, contained absolutely by the light room. Mm-hmm. So even when we're in there using all of our energy to stay stuck in misery, all around us is bliss. Mm-hmm. What? What's going on? Tony.
I don't know what I want to say.
Now just stop right there. Isn't that the best? You felt an impulse. Life is moving you to express something. What is it? I don't know. I'll find out when I start talking what life has to say.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. It is so counter what we're taught. But that's it. And it's trusting that every second of life.
Mm. Well, part of it was I just wanted to be... It involves.
Stop right there. Okay. Because when you, the moment that urge comes up, that urge is to be a part of, right? Not to be separate from. So how do you do that? You participate. You express yourself. You, okay? And there you are. You cannot be separate any longer as long as you're doing that.
Mm.
So there's that urge from life to say, don't just sit there. Don't do that. You know what happens. honey, now you know what happens when you just sit there. And so you respond to that urge, you participate, and there you are.
Yeah. That's really helpful, because once the desire to participate and just, you know, be involved, then I start to think, well, what am I going to say?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And is everybody right there? That's it. And then the attention goes there. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I need to know what to say. Well, I mean, truly, the most powerful thing that you're ever going to get out of facilitating is, no, you don't need to know what to say. Mm-hmm. Life knows perfectly what to say. It's extremely articulate and very, very wise. Mm-hmm. Just let it talk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
thank you.
Alex?
I think it feels like when the conversation is left behind, or we're not entertaining it any longer and we're here, it feels like that's what service, that's why there's such an attraction to it, because I'm not it, it is all of me. And when you shared about not being one up, it's not like I'm doing anything for anybody, it's that it really is all about, it's in a funny way, it's really just all about participating in the way it was just described.
Yeah.
Is that there's something, and it occurs to me that I could be part of that something.
Yes. And so it's like there's life, mm-hmm. and you're the heart, and you're the hands, you know?
You're something like that.
on a musical. That's going to be part of our facilitator training. We're going to put on a musical. And then life through you can express, and can there is that mutual service.
Yeah.
So it's like life serving life through all of these avenues.
Yeah. And it's not possible when I'm engaged in this, because this will see how things are wrong, how it's still playing into the same system. Like,
yep.
I'm a good person if I do this, or
yep.
I need to do the good people do this, or it's wrong that this is happening.
Yep. And there's just no time for it.
Right, because we're just so busy with being here that...
Doing what we're called to do.
Doing what we're called to do.
What is that? You can't serve God and... What is
masters.
You can't serve two masters, but in the Bible they actually lay out what it is. Is it mammon or something like that?
Oh, the Old Testament.
Yeah, well, never mind, you heathens. Quit quoting the Bible to you people. But you know, I truly think that's what's being stated. You cannot serve egocentric karmic conditioning. You cannot serve the illusion of a self that is separate from life and serve life. You can't. And what we're talking about, it is exactly that. Your attention is either there or it's here. It's there or it's here. You can't. Your attention can only be on one thing at a time.
I don't know why this is coming up, but it is. Because one of my favorite experiences is... which it took a long time for this to be a favorite experience, is the cleanup at the monastery in the kitchen. Like, especially like at the end of a deepening retreat, like one of the first deepening retreats I was at, there was, I don't know, there was a pretty big crowd, so it was like 12 or 15 people, and we would all do every cleanup, every meal prep, and so that's a lot of people.
I get this into the towel, you get that into the towel.
Well, you know how you like to camp out and get your favorite space or find something you really know how to do and do that, but it becomes impossible with that many people and everybody's, you know, like if you snooze for a minute, somebody's going to get your place. And that's how it is, you know, at the beginning of the retreat, but then at the end, it is just like a dance. And you know, being in it, it just feels like being in, surrounded by people who are really in the moment,
uh-huh.
because we don't run into each other.
Yeah.
Somehow we transition from one task and somebody else takes it over, and it's like a dance.
Yeah.
And it'll be people that came, you know, with all this conditioning stuff going on in the beginning, you know, and we transition to that. And to me, that always just makes me feel like anything is possible.
Yeah, because what you're describing, you know, if they were, if everybody was learning a dance, we could say, well, 30 days, for God's sake, anybody can learn a dance in 30 days. But if there's no choreography.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's improv. Mm-hmm. And so what people have really learned is to just...
You have to pay attention. You can't go in there with a plan. You don't you have no idea what you're going to do. And you just have to pay attention. And it amazes me that a group of retreatants does that.
Uh-huh.
You know, people with different years of experience, somehow we
well,
do that.
Again... Now, this is my interest in people facilitating.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we will do for the love of others what we would not do for ourselves, because the stakes are really high. You've got people there in front of you whose spiritual well-being is dependent upon you being as centered as you can be, and you'll do it. So it just like in the kitchen, you're not going to just stand there. It's just too embarrassing.
It's too, yeah, it's pretty hard to be in conditioning in there because the cleanup is...
You can't do it. You just can't do it. And so you get centered.
Yeah.
And then my favorite story about that, years ago when I was participating in a, well, project opportunity, some of you remember that, and there was a group of facilitators, and one of our facilitators was just one of the most brilliant facilitators I've ever known and one of the most screwed up human beings ever assembled. Okay? And, I mean, she would walk in, we would be in a meeting together, and she was just, you know, just nuts. And then she would walk into the room to facilitate, and it's just like, I mean, you could watch it. It was like turning on a light switch. And we're all going, but, you know, if you knew her outside of facilitation, you'd say, never let that woman alone with a room full of people. But we'd all seen her facilitated. I mean, 100% of the time, just nails. Okay? So she finishes facilitating one day. She walks out of the room, and in one of those blinding flashes of light, she said, you know, if I can do that for them, I can do it for me. Mm-hmm. And her whole life transformed. Mm-hmm. So that's why, to me, facilitation is so important, and it's the reason that I really, 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 really want people to understand the importance of not letting conditioned mind take over facilitation, so that you can, you know, it becomes your facilitation coach, and you're looking to it to know, but that what you're really doing is practicing being as present as you can, so that your practice deepens, because that's the whole point, because your practice will deepen, and as your practice deepens, then a deeper practice is available for other people to see. Okay? It's not that you're going to think of something brilliant to say to them that's going to change their lives. It's not. That's not going to happen. It's that your commitment to practice is what they're going to see, and that's what will transform their lives. I had something else, but we've talked about all of it. Oh, except there was one more question. Do we have time for one more question? Okay, so if you take out your little notepad and that sort of thing. And generally, and as specifically as you can, would you jot down, I think this is your own, very own question, what stops you from getting guidance? So we know the real answer is egocentric karmic conditioning, but how does it specifically do that with you?
argument for assisting the powers that be in turning the weather around as quickly as possible, in case you want something to put your energy into. Here's the philosophy behind it. It is very difficult for people to come on retreat. It's very difficult. If they are physically uncomfortable, if it's hard, then the tendency to be in conversation with those voices all the time is big. And if it can get turned into, I don't want to do that. I mean, I know for a fact that there were people who came here and they were so cold that basically they pretty much decided they would never go on another retreat anywhere. And so for us to do everything always to make people unobtrusively as comfortable as possible is a good thing, because we never want to put anything in front of somebody to stumble over that's not a necessary thing for them to stumble over.
We should all communicate with the powers that be.
We should all put our... The ego, not so much. And although, you know, if we choose to... and no clouds. We've got those.
Who does this regularly says, and to be very specific.
To be very specific, yeah. That's why I was, I said, it's sunshine during the day. If people need the rain, rain at night. That's great, but sunshine during the day. So.
And people can remember the service they're doing as they're scrubbing those cabins the rest of them this afternoon. Mm-hmm. Unrelated to the weather, but it's the same thing. You know, we try to make it as clean as...
Yes.
It's work handicap, obviously, but to make it look like it's clean and attended to, and, you know...
To do the best we can.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for me, I feel love when I'm doing it. I consciously bring myself to a place of...
That it's an act of love. It's a gift to somebody.
That energy.
And, you know... It takes people a long time, usually, generally speaking, in practice to feel that. Mm-hmm. You know, when people first come to something like this, all they see is what doesn't work. You know, it's like, oof. But after a while, as the tendency shifts, then people become aware of all that's been done. All that, you know, instead of, and I don't really like that, it's like, how do they turn out these meals in that kitchen with this, you know? But all of that grows with practice as we go along. So that's just the philosophy. So can I hear a little from people about maybe each person? Give one, and then you can always steal these if you realize that, you know, oh, yes, that stops me too. Mm-hmm. So where should we begin? Alex?
All of mine are self-taught.
Yeah.
So they're too busy.
They're too busy. That's a good one.
Okay. They're already overwhelmed. It will push them over the edge.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yes. So we can call these self-talk and projection. Yeah. Okay.
Now is just not the right time.
Now is not the right time. There is a right time to push them over the edge, but this is not it. Yeah. Okay.
I've got the conferring is kind of a weakness, and it shows lack of self-confidence.
Aha. Uh-huh. Conferring is a weakness and shows a lack of self-confidence. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's on every level, right? Down to it would never occur to me because I know what the answer is. Yeah.
So, wanting to get done with something, have resolution right now.
We need closure on this. That conversation just draws things out. Mm-hmm. We need resolution.
Mm-hmm. Mine's a theme on that. It will take too long. Some urgency.
Well, look at that list, for God's sake. I mean, of all of those things that we're not going to get to if we waste all of our time on this one. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And aren't these all just unbelievably plausible?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I had this one the other day because there was something I felt like I should communicate and I was too far gone.
I'm too far gone. I'm too far over the edge.
I feel like I was going to communicate so badly.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, in a way that wasn't attractive or something, and I was just like, I don't know what to do now.
Yes. Did you have one, Laurie?
Oh, well, they're all you statements, all about what I've done wrong and I don't belong and I should know by now.
Well, no, they're actually you.
Mm-hmm. They're all you statements.
Yeah, you should know.
Why don't you know? What's wrong with you? Why can't you get it? So that it's like not even being worthy to ask, or, you know, then I'll get some kind of feedback that's really painful.
I'm not going to say anything because what I'm going to get back is something that it's going to be too painful to hear. Okay. Dave?
Well, the ugliest one on my left is essentially sabotage. And it's not really it's not intentional sabotage, but it's, you know, basically wanting to mess things up.
You know,
conditioning. I feel like that's a lot of what goes on back there. It's just conditioning, attempting to act through me to get in the way, obstruct things, mess things up, have things not work.
Yeah. That as a general theme, I would agree. And we all know that. Right? We all know the difference between everybody's communicating, everybody's on the team, we're all moving together, and then somebody slides off and starts this, and somebody else slides off and starts this, and pretty soon it's just chaos and misery, and everybody's unhappy, and nothing's getting done. And
exactly. And I don't want that.
Right.
But it's just that there's a confusion. That
from here.
Right. I get confused that who I am is that voice. And so
yes.
That voice desperately wants to everything to be messed up and nothing to work. And if I believe I'm it, I'm just speaking it.
Yeah.
Or not speaking it.
Yeah.
A lot of times.
Yes, exactly. Because sins of omission and sins of commission.
Same difference.
Same difference. It all leads to the same mess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Michael?
My suspicion is that just revealed what's actually happening. But what it is that I'm putting off the inevitable request to take my leave. To leave, because two things are going to happen. One is what's actually happening with me is going to be found out and won't be acceptable. And two, I'm going to be asked to change and I won't be able to. So a pattern will be revealed, and it'll be, well, that would be good to change that, and then I won't be able to, and then it'll be, well, can't change that, so.
It, we're kind of full circle on that one. Do you see the full circle back to what I was talking about this morning? When we first got here? That, of course you can change that. Mm-hmm. That's absurd. There's not anything about you when you're here at center that would need to change. Mm-hmm. Anything about you that comes from egocentric karmic conditioning is as simple to change as dropping it.
I think that's why. I think that's the sense that it's actually sabotage.
Yes.
And why that seems to fit.
Yes.
Because it's like I'm working really hard to sabotage.
Oh no, conditioning is. Yeah, conditioning is working really hard to sabotage you. So that's really. I mean, all of us could plug in content to that. So a game gets set up with standards and rules. Okay, it's not clear that that's what's happening, but I mean, you just laid out the conditions. Right? This is going to happen, and then that. This will happen, and then that. Okay, now that's not examined. It's not, well, what if that's not true? Or I should check that out, or whatever. It's just a given that that's the case. So once the given is accepted, then the sabotage is working toward that goal. Because as soon as that, then that, game over. Did you follow me on that?
Yeah.
So I'm doing what I'm actually doing. Nobody knows. Okay, for one of them. Who I actually am, nobody knows. When they find out, I'll be asked to leave. Okay. Then all I have to do is make sure they find out I'm doing something that is going to get me asked to leave.
And that's what conditioning is angling for. Are you with me on that?
Yeah, I'm with you on the two parts, and I didn't make the connection between them.
Well, so, okay, if I start swearing in the meditation hall, they're going to ask me to leave.
Yeah.
Okay? So now, no, we don't check that out. We don't. I've just decided that.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So egocentric karmic conditioning now goes into overdrive to get you to start cussing in the meditation hall.
Okay.
Now it's set up as if, so don't do that. Okay. Don't do that, because if you do that, then you're going to be kicked out. So don't do that. But what's going on over here is do that, do that, do that, do that, do that, until finally you do. Okay.
So where are the scissors? Here's the question.
You're using them.
So by looking at this.
You're looking at it, and you're talking about it. Looking at it, and you're talking about it. You're watching it, and you're saying what it's doing. That's why communication. Otherwise, there's all that communication. And it's the assumption. Okay? So this is what's going on, and it's true. Okay? But what if you said everything? What if you said everything? It would have the conversation. There'd be no sense in having that conversation. Because it would be over. Hey, everybody knows that. Mark, I don't want to talk about that. Everybody knows that. I already told everybody that. Shut up. You with me?
Yes.
But it's when it can draw us into secrets, secret thoughts and secret conversations and... Okay? And what it wants us to believe is it's doing this to keep us safe. Okay? So nobody can know about any of this, because you're only safe as long as nobody knows. You're only unsafe as long as nobody knows.
I think that's a good koan.
Well, you can try it out in little ways.
Right. Well, that's pretty much what's going on for me today. That whole process of, you know, saying something and then feeling like I shouldn't have said something, and then getting another piece of information that confirms that I shouldn't have said something, and then the fear that I'm going to be asked to leave the facilitated program. And that's just been going round and round. And I thought, well, I can't even talk in here, because I'll do something else, and then I'll be for sure asked to leave. So that's what. So I'm saying it because I'm so scared about it.
Mm-hmm. And do you get? You must, because you're saying something. That it's the not saying it that would get you asked to leave.
Yeah, I get that in one way, and in another way, there's also the talk about I shouldn't have said anything this morning about the difficulty that I'm having.
Okay, remember the refrigerator guy?
Yeah.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Oh, I shouldn't have said anything about it. Mm-hmm. Really?
Well, when I said something, then something else happened, though. Then I was asked if I wanted to leave.
Ask if you wanted to leave.
To leave this, the facilitator part of the retreat. So then, the story.
And what did you say?
I said no, I don't want to. I want to be here.
Okay. So that seems good, right? To clarify that. Yeah. So, what possibly could we be doing here besides getting to the bottom of this kind of thing? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, other than getting tormented, which is what's been happening for me.
Yes, and to see that torment for what it is.
Right.
Yeah, because it didn't just start today, did it?
The torment?
Yeah, you've been
tormented. Very familiar.
Yeah, you've been tormented before. So to have that experience, to have that come up, to have it come up in this context, to get to see it for what it is, to get a great deal of support for getting, seeing it and getting through it and getting to the other side.
Right.
That's what we're going for.
Right. And each time, you know, that it's gonna grab onto that, you know, it's gonna grab onto that conversation. Well, see, they really wanted to go, obviously. They wouldn't ask you if you want to stay unless they wanted you to go. And then to say that out loud, because I can just say, yeah, that's what I've been listening to.
That's right. Here. Yes. And you can actually say, so
do you want me to leave?
You can ask that question. Yeah. Did you just ask that question? Absolutely not.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. And so, you know, so then when it brings that up, you do have the ability to say, we're not having that conversation.
Yeah.
We already had that conversation. I asked about it. I got the answer. I know what the answer is. No. Okay. We're not talking about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you don't, oh my God, I mean, it'll just twist and twist and twist and twist and twist until they actually told me to leave. Well, you'd be a fool to come back.
Right.
Yeah. Very good. I must say, it was by the hair of your chinny chin chin or the skin of your teeth or whatever, right down to the wire on that. I was actually starting to wonder if you were gonna. Yeah. So good. Mm-hmm. Good job.
Thank you.
Yeah.
This is something that's been going on with me for a long time. I felt so excited about some of the things I've been seeing, you know, just on a process level, and I want guidance. I mean, I don't want to just be me seeing it. I want to say, there, I can tell you about it. And so what happens is it seems like it's not appropriate for most things we do. Like, I mean, this is like what goes on with me about, well, you know, you don't want to say it in the Reflective Listening Buddies conference call because that's, you know, a bunch of newcomers. And you don't want to say it. It's not a facilitation retreat topic. And, you know, so it always seems like there's never a place where it fits. And
okay, so I'm hoping the blog is a place where it fits. I also really like, and I think we've talked about this in the past, I don't know what happened to it, when Chris was mentioning the facilitators' Reflective Listening Buddies system, a place where you can talk about stuff, either talk about stuff that's hard, that you really don't want to bring up. There's no appropriate place to bring it up. Because you don't, I mean, Lori's not going to want to talk to somebody who just started practice about what she's just looking at here. I mean, no. And also to talk about the really amazing stuff without it sounding like, oh, well, I don't want to talk to her anymore. I mean, she's totally enlightened and I'm just a, you know, a mess up over here. So I think that would be really a great thing. I'm hoping the blog will serve that purpose.
I wondered about that, because would it just be facilitation topic? I mean, I know everything can be a facilitation topic, but there's
everything
stuff
is.
That I feel like, yeah, that a lot of people would have done a lot of practice.
The question that I didn't ask, because it felt like we had gotten to it, is how is facilitation different from real life? And I hope we've had that conversation. And so, yes, everything is, you know, to me, the facilitation program is for people to be able to deepen their practice.
Yeah.
That's it. Do we need more people in practice? No. Are we proselytizing? No. It's for all of you to have that place where you have to show up and to get to watch what arises in that. So to have a place. What you said is what has kept me in love with practice forever. As soon as the shift happens away from this is about me to this is seeing the deal.
Yeah.
This is seeing, oh my God, this is what happens. Okay, and I've seen how that works with that, and that goes with that, and oh my God, Okay? So to be able to put those things out just benefits everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's good to hear.
Mm-hmm. Dave?
A couple thoughts on it, just on a practical level with that. The power of technology to bring us together, I think, could really serve us in all of this. What I've been getting over the course of the weekend is that the part that's missing from the program really is the support more than anything else. In some way, because just we're all geographically distant. And so, like, could we, I've been looking over the course of the morning, could we have, you know, the key groups are on Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, whatever, and just everybody who has their group that night, that's their group night. And so everybody's in a key group. I don't know if that would work or not, but that way the people could be rotating facilitation. There could be more. Somebody from the monastery could be.
So you mean somebody in Hawaii, somebody in Massachusetts, somebody in wherever. Mm-hmm. They all have their key group on the same night, and mm-hmm. are they technologically connected?
Yep.
Wow.
I don't know if that would work or not, or if that feels like that would be helpful, but just in some ways so we're not isolated, mm-hmm. having these individual experiences we can't really get input on or process about. But if it was all happening in a container where we're all participating, then it seems like that would go a long way to providing the support that's there. Because for one thing, it would just having those other people there and the other facilitator, somebody could bail you out. Facilitating from the side becomes possible. It would take away. You know, a lot of people are talking about the difficulty of facilitating in a small group of people who really have no idea what practice is all about. Mm-hmm. And so there'd be a lot more modeling happening within that. So, I don't know.
Well, you know, as with everything, it seems worth a try. Mm-hmm. Tony and then Karen.
Because, yeah, I've been, one of the things that I got excited about when we talked about the pods was, because I don't know, you know, I mean, I'm basically just doing pure reflective listening. But I don't, you know, I would love to be able to have somebody watching or listening or even modeling, you know, the way we share more in like the sitting group. But somebody to, so, be, you know,
coaching
if I'm, what I'm doing is appropriate and, you know, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. Karen?
I'm so happy that we're looking at this because I had written at times it seems like there's no mechanism in place to be able to get guidance. And so, and then the blog has really, I think that's really going to help. And I have had this sense in the group at home that because people are eager. They want to know. And I have envisioned like this little file box, and when people are like at that point, that I could thumb through and, you know, like, okay, this is what Sherry's written here, boom, you know, and just go through here, and kind of impart the information. And then I wrote in last week, and I'd written earlier and never heard back. I really want to have a lending library of your books and your tapes and things, and I got permission to start that, and I told my group before I left that next time when I return on Tuesday, that's going to be there, and they're just so excited because they want it. Mm-hmm. They really want it, and it isn't. It seems like me just reflecting is they want more.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dave and I actually did. You tell them about the conversation we had about the next level of facilitator training.
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
The question that we were playing with, you know, somebody comes into your group.
Oh, no, I didn't.
And they lift up their hands and say, I have hemorrhoids, and I'm wondering about, I really want to sit on the cushion, but it's quite painful. Here, let me reflect that.
And to put up the box here.
Yeah, to me that's the perfect example of, okay, what do we do when we hit a place where reflecting is just, you know, and the person looks at you and goes, yeah, I know that's what I said. What do I do?
And I project that that's happening to us, especially for the ones that our participants don't have experience of this practice, but mm-hmm. they are drawn to it.
Mm-hmm.
I project that. When that comes up,
every single week.
Mm-hmm.
And I just...
Yeah, well, I think that this those ideas are good. You know, if with the blog, we could start off probably with that as a way for people to get guidance, you know, in that even taking turns with, you know, responding, sharing things, first of all, the insights and the awarenesses and, God, I just saw this and I realized that and somebody said this and then, so we're all enriched by that. But there's also a section of danger, danger. You know, I really need somebody to help me out on this. And then that could be a place where the monastery provides guidance. As I said to Dave, you know, when I first started doing this, I'd go out and then somebody would say that kind of thing to me, the hemorrhoid thing, and I would, and what I would say is, I don't know. This is one of those places where it's really important for me to get guidance because mm-hmm. I don't know what the answer is to that, and I don't want to lead you astray. Mm-hmm. So I'll check in with my mentor or my whatever, however you want to frame that, my facilitation coach, and I'll let you know next week mm-hmm. when we get together,
mm-hmm.
and that builds your confidence as facilitators. It supports the communication thing. It builds confidence in the people that, you know, this is a whole organization and that they have a lot of support, that you have support, they have support. And I think it's going to, I hope it's going to speak to a lot of those kinds of issues. And, you know, after the thing that happens, you know, yes, in the beginning, reflecting is really, really, really important. Reflecting, drawing out, and clarifying. But after a while, you do know the answers to some questions. You know, my leg keeps falling asleep. Okay? Well, after somebody's run you through the how do legs fall asleep and what are the three most common causes, you know, you can actually answer that question. You don't have to... So your leg keeps falling asleep. So what I hear you saying is, every time you sit, your leg, I mean, you could sound like an idiot. And so you have a growing repertoire of things that you do have the authority to speak to in practice. You can always use your own experience. Well, in my experience, or... You know, what I've done is, okay, and I'm going to get back to you, okay? I'm going to check with the monks and see what else that might be offered to you. And it's finding that balance of when you offer something, you know, when you realize the reflecting, drawing out, and clarifying is just not taking this person where they need to get to. And then how do I have a skillful way of either responding to them because it's a very concrete, specific thing, you know, well, try sitting a little farther left on your cushion or sometimes not wearing things that constrict behind, you know, whatever it is, those kinds of specific answers. Or, well, what I have done and I'm going to seek guidance and see what else might be available for you. You begin to balance those.
Yeah, because I feel like I've been going backwards as a facilitator or something. Because, you know, for a while I would go a little beyond the reflective listening, would be a little more spontaneous, and it felt really like I was facilitating from center. And now I've gotten real rulish. I've gotten real. I'm only going to reflect, and I'm not going to, you know, I'm trying to stay real in some real strict guidelines, and I feel like it's shutting me down a good bit.
Yeah.
As a facilitator.
Yeah. You've got the evil coach.
Yeah.
Turning it into rules.
Yeah, it's really not fun.
Because, you know, if you do something, you know, you say something, and it's just a disaster, you know, well, I think you should... just learn from it. You know, that's the, ooh, gosh, I may not have been my most skillful moment. Rather than, you know, beatings and I shouldn't and I've got to avoid. Because you're right, you don't want to get in a straitjacket about it.
It's felt kind of flat since the last facilitator retreat. And I'm looking at what's, you know, what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to ask Lynette and then Dave, and then I think it's time.
Yeah, so I'm kind of in the same place. I have a group that's, I think they're very committed, but sometimes with the readings, they just, you can just see. It's like, what is this about? And so there have been times where I have said, just pretty much from my experience, it's like, well, you know, this is what I look at. And, you know, I've gotten beat up for doing that. Because it's like, what comes in is, you shouldn't put anything out there to guide them. They're equal to their experience. They need their own thoughts.
Well, they are equal to their experience. And if they really understand that that's the experience they're supposed to be having. So, you know, one of the things that I think would be really important for people to know is this looks simple, and there's a way in which it is, but it's deep.
I know, and I think it's a group that kind of know each other, and so I feel like they want to be smart.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So no one is willing to start.
Uh-huh.
Because it's like, what if they just, you know, and I try to make it just really kind and easy.
Uh-huh.
But
yeah.
I think that's going.
Yeah, and so I don't know with the, because I haven't really been in on a lot of conversations about this, but it seems really important that people have a lot of encouragement in certain directions. Like, this stuff doesn't come easy. You know, this is kind of profound teachings presented in little handwriting, little pictures. But don't be confused, you know. And you could talk about, you know, one of the stories that I always tell early on is how I would come and sit with my teacher, and at some point he would say, "Well, it's not what, it's how." You know, and that whole progression, and everybody has those experiences from their own, you know, where, you know, I knew to look as intelligent as I could look, but I also knew I had not a clue what he was talking about. I knew it was important. Yeah. So, you know, those kinds of personal experience with how long it took you to get something and what that process is of getting something. You know, so I would wish that there were permission, you know, with every group to take on something that you sense is important for the group from your own experience. You know, 3 minutes on putting something on the back burner and just trusting that it's, at some point it's going to come together and I'm going to get it. That kind of...
That seems really... And I think I was operating on the same principle that after the last facilitating retreat, that just stick to reflection as much as possible. And it does.
Yes, as much as possible.
Yeah,
and what?
Like,
yes, and what you're going for is that intuitive sense of this is time for a little more. And with the support structure, you can come back and say, and so this happened, and I was feeling this, and I said this, and, you know, it felt like it worked. You know, the person didn't cry or scream or anything. But just checking in to see, was that, or was there something, you know, and then we all have a chance to learn from it.
Dave had said something on one of our calls that I really liked. Somebody had asked something, and he said, get in and get out as quick as you can. I mean, get in, do whatever you got to do, but then... back into reflecting.
Yes, exactly.
And that's been a good
guide. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very good. Dave?
I was just going to mention one tiny little thing. It's interesting. It's from the last facilitator retreat, but there's, I don't know, unfortunately Alex just left, but how hard it'd be to find, but there's great information in there about drawing out and clarifying. So So we did a whole process during that retreat about that. So maybe, you know, I'll ask Alex if we have a way we could isolate. That might be really useful for people to have, because that's a is another, you know, kind of safe and way to sort of begin to step out of reflective listening a little bit, to have a sense of what those things are all about.
Yes. So are clarifying and drawing out are not techniques that people regularly use, or they are?
Well, for me, it's pretty hard to draw out and clarify when you're a little silent. There's a second.
Silence is a good practice. Well, and do facilitators have permission to start off? I mean, would you feel with the reading that you could start off with your experience of that, or what you look at with that, if it doesn't seem to be sparking anybody? Would you? You wouldn't?
I mean, we haven't been doing that, but...
I didn't think we were supposed to.
I'm feeling quite liberated from rules that have been...
Well, this is good. Where are those rules from yesterday? Remember we had a list of rules from yesterday? Pay attention.
Drop the voices.
In the relationship with conditioning.
And communicate everything. Yeah. So if we went with those as the rules...
Well, especially communicate everything, because it's just really interesting to hear it from this point of view, because I didn't realize that's where people were. But something like the blog, you know, if there's a way people could say kind of what the assumptions they're making about it, or hear kind of our approaching it, so we can have it all out in the open, then maybe we could liberate ourselves from
that. Yeah, well, just this, the reading is there, and there's our guy. The reading is there, and nobody says anything. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if all we're supposed to do is reflect, it's really hard to do. And then, yeah. So any time you feel uncomfortable, any time you're restricted or following rules or anything like that, check it out. I think what we're supposed to be doing is this. I'm doing this, and this is what I'm getting. You shouldn't be feeling that.
Well, and then what we need is a really good way to do that. And I just have a lot of good feelings about the blog, because it's instantaneous. You can put it right there. The guidance essentially doesn't have to come from the monastery, in the sense that everybody will be reading it. People can be putting in their own experience. The monastery can go through and offer what the monastery offers, but it's like we can all teach each other from our own experience.
Yes.
But in a way that we can all see what's happening, which I think is a real part of it, because otherwise we could help.
Oh, yeah. Well, the danger, of course, is that people would take this and make rules.
Exactly.
And we just don't want to do that.
Yeah. So staying in conversation feels like it's really the only way out of that, because it has to stay alive all the time. Because as soon as we stop talking about things, anything, then we start boxing it up, it feels like.
And, you know, as woo-woo and weird as this, you know, bringing in eagles and changing the weather, again, back to that, what are children learning? And so if you're in a group and you are paralyzed by rules, then you could be saying anything. But what they're learning is paralyzed by rules. And that is not what we want to be communicating about this practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have on our calls frequently, we'll have, like, somebody will bring a situation and say, well, here's what happens, and we all kind of look at that, and I find it really powerful and liberating, because it just opens up that whole, oh gosh, well, there's this angle to look at it, and you can look at it this way, and, you know, all that. It just kind of opens all that up and opens up all those possibilities.
Yeah, and hopefully the blog will present the topic for those calls. You know, if everybody is, you can even vote. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if eight out of ten people are saying, yeah, me too, then that would be the topic for the call.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So in my experience with going from reflective listening to drawing out and clarifying, it's just a really big jump.
Mm-hmm.
And it would sure be nice if there were some little ways that people could inch into that. Mm-hmm. It seems like the blog could provide a lot of that support for that. And at some point, it really is just a leap.
Yeah, because when you say that, you know, it could be a little game. So this week in our groups, everybody is going to find one opportunity to draw somebody out.
Yeah.
And so it's a conscious...
Needs to happen here someplace.
Needs someplace.
Yeah. Here's how it might happen.
Yeah.
Here's some of the questions you might...
Yes, these are good drawing out questions. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, we're going to clarify. This week we're going to... Or for the next... Yeah. This week we're going to clarify. You'd have a different game that everybody's playing every week and then watching the results.
So with one of the... reflective listening buddies calls with a facilitator. Mm-hmm. When I signed up for this particular quarter, and I don't think the information was there that we were going to actually do drawing and clearing out or clarifying questions. Mm-hmm. And when that became apparent for the other facilitator, you know, my projection was it just, you know, just completely unhinged this other person, just to the point where dreading the phone calls and. This is a whole thing. I'm gonna, you know, just a real. That's what kind of that kind of experience was. Pretty clear that was going on the other end of the line.
Okay, where I thought you were going to go was the person just lost all sight of reflecting, which is another big danger. Mm-hmm. So the person just, you know, starts drawing out and clarifying, which is way more fun and interesting because I get to really participate. So. So when that happened to you, did you, it's like, so, you know, again, on this side or on this side, it can be a disaster. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's a good idea to approach it in little bits
some
and process what
in
goes.
The game. Yeah. Because I think there's a big chunk of conditioning that, and I was looking at was, is that something that kind of gets installed in people in the beginning part of spiritual practice, or is the good retreatant, and that's what we're up against, and the... drawing out and clarifying questions actually are, you know, behind that identity in some sense, or that identity is blocking them out. So, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, it sounds like, you know, the evil coach takes hold of, you know, it's any information that comes through, the evil coach is going to grab it and turn it into rules and standards and that sort of thing. So. One more.
I keep talking about not being excited with all the things going on. The other one, this is something that I really goes on for me a whole lot about facilitating in this practice, is I feel like the key group thing, or, you know, reading the key would have been something I couldn't have survived as a person trying to enter this practice. Mm-hmm. And I want to facilitate something that I would have been able to participate in. It would have been too scary to me to walk in this small group, they read this thing, and then, you know, the pressure to speak and all that. So I don't know, and maybe that's something I need to figure out for myself, some other place being. But it's a struggle for me because I feel like I wouldn't be able to come to my group. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a huge conversation that we should have. And so to me it falls under the category of practice has worked for me, now I want to turn it into something that I think would work for me. Do you know what I mean? So you did survive practice as it was presented.
And Sherry Huber was my facilitator.
And you made it. For us to trust that the same process will work for other people. Mm-hmm. That's that integrity of the practice.
Can I just second
that? That you wouldn't have survived a key group?
I wouldn't have survived. Yeah. It's, I would have quit.
What would you have done?
What would I have done?
Yeah. If you were new to practice, what would you have done? What would you have done? What would you have participated in?
I participated in, well, you know, the first thing I participated in, there was nothing wrong, and that was, it took me about another year and a half to come back.
Right.
I didn't know what I was getting into.
Yeah, so that, I think, that is the bottom line point.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, not for us not to assume that because conditioning doesn't like something. You know, for one of my favorite lines from a guy was, you know, the reason that I keep coming back is that you will not give an inch.
Mm.
Now, you know, does he like it? No. But it's the place that... And that's what this practice is. So, you know, this practice, one of the things that we have to all face is that this is an intense practice.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people who will never want to do this practice, no matter how nice we are to them.
Mm-hmm.
And we are nice. So, yeah. Yeah, it is. It is hard. And, you know, Eiheiji, which was the temple in Japan where Dogen was, you cannot go there if you are not in 100% perfect physical shape. Now, can you imagine Americans trying to deal with that? Ah, that's wrong! I mean, we want wheelchair access into the meditation hall and into the, you know, no. If you are not 100% physically sound, and it goes without saying mentally sound, this is not for you. Do something else. And that can sound horrible, I know, but that is part of the way the integrity is maintained. You know, we're always here. You can always come back, but we'll always be here exactly the same. And you're going to have to change. We're not. And that, I think, is almost the bottom line message of awareness practice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what the Buddha taught is not going to change because it's hard for me. So, thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Be kind to yourself.